We're back on All Things Alex Garland, diving into his 2018 film adaptation of Jeff Vandermeer's cosmic horror novel, Annihilation.
Good lungful there, babe. But is the box office the only place this film failed? And why did Alex Garland change the ending to the novel?
What can the structure of this film reveal about its subject?
And when all is said and done and the credits are rolled, what's it really mean?
I'm Ben Groves.
I'm Rob McFarlane.
And welcome to the Every Movie Ever podcast! So before we get into what we're doing, buddy, let's just quickly ask the most important question. How are you doing, babe?
I'm good. I'm on a short work week this week because I'm going gigging.
You are?
And then I'm going to stay out of Telford, have a wonderful time.
Nice.
But I'm excited because it's Nine Inch Nails and I've not seen them in years. I've seen them like 11 times. Okay. Tried to keep myself relatively spoiler-like, but then I did... I'm connected to a lot of Nine Inch Nails stuff.
Yeah.
And the stuff that came up in my algorithm has got me fizzing.
Right.
Besides that, I'm struggling. I've got head weather is not great. I know yours isn't the same. Yeah. And I'm sorry to hear that too. We recorded Love and Mercy episode yesterday.
Yesterday.
And not, you know, I know they say what a difference a day makes. Not that much.
Very little, to be honest. In all fairness, today's a bit of a weird one. I had a little scare earlier.
Right.
Been sober for nearly 4 years now.
You have. Well done for that.
August, thank you. On August 13th, it'll be 4 years.
Hey.
And then today, after a ridiculously long week, just went to the co-op to buy some vegetables because I was like, fuck, I need something green or orange.
Cold
to
grape.
Just put in my face.
Mm-hmm.
And the freezer aisle, where all like, you know, the fucking cheap frozen veg shit is.
Yeah.
Is behind the alcohol aisle.
Oof.
So I was like, but again, just, you know, fucking whatever brain was going on, walking down the alcohol aisle, and I was like, oh man, just a cheap Rioja would sort me right out. Completely forgot. Like, it's this whole thing, it just wasn't in my head that I was like, that's not a thing anymore. It was suddenly there, and I was like, immediately though, caught it and was like, what the fuck are you doing? This isn't a thing. And then I got scared and left.
Yeah, I understand. And then you've had all the complex feelings after that.
I've just had a weird guilt, shame filled day of being sort of like, ooh, this is a new one that I've not
I feel it's
had
a little
for a
bit,
while.
It's a little bit like progress isn't a straight line though, right? And if you get good enough at something and you're doing it well enough, it becomes second nature for a bit and then it stops being an active effort.
Yeah.
It stops being like a daily, oh my, and obviously it's always there.
Yeah.
It's kind of like you're not defining yourself as a recently sober person anymore.
100%.
So then you pass a bottle of wine and then memory from 5 years clicks in and just goes, oh, Rioja, because that burden is always going to be there.
Yeah, 1,000%.
But it's not digging into your back quite so keenly, so it's easier
exactly.
to forget.
I don't walk down the street going, what do I do with my hands?
Right.
You know what I mean? Because
right.
they're always there and I'm just sort of, they're just hands.
Right, exactly.
Sobriety is the same thing. It's just, it's in the back of my head. It follows me around everywhere. I'm good with it. I'm, you know, I'm on top of it. But for a brief second today.
I think that's my point, as I think this is the proof in the pudding that you're good with it and you're on top of it because it's in a position now where you're going to occasionally forget.
Okay, that's a nice way of looking at it.
I think this is kind of on point, and this has worked out quite well, because I'm going to take you through the 5 stages of grief today.
Yes, sick. Looking forward to this one.
Yeah, not only because you need it, you sad little muffin man.
Right.
Because the film, I don't think the film's solely about grief, but it is hung off the same 5-stage framework, believe it or not.
Okay.
I'm going to prove this.
Yeah, it's fine. I'm looking forward to learning, man. I've done fuck all research into this.
Good.
Because you told me to.
Also, the subtext of the narrative, it's there, but also behind the scenes. Behind the scenes, I've found some behind the scenes stuff that also fits. I'm proud of this one.
Okay.
This is a well, tightly woven together little bit of podcast.
I'm looking forward to it.
And I'm looking forward to getting people through it. Just before we do, not everyone's seen this movie.
They should.
Some people have seen this movie, but it was years ago and they've kind of forgotten. I think before we have the emotional breakdown, let's have a little plot breakdown.
I'm down for a plot breakdown.
Yeah?
That was hard to say.
Yeah, isn't it? Right? Do you want to start us off? No, you're about to drink a Lucozade. I'll start us off. After a year missing, Lena's husband, Kane, suddenly returns home. Confused, sick, and unable to explain where he's been. You see, we don't do that anymore. That used to be us all the time.
No.
Soon after, he collapses and is rushed to a government facility. All right, triad. We never went that far. Where Lena learns he was part of a secret mission into a strange environmental zone called the Shimmer. It appeared after something fell from the sky and hit a lighthouse. Nothing that's gone in has ever come out until now with Kane. Hoping to understand what happened to him, Lena joins the next exhibition.
Lena enters the Shimmer with four other women. Almost immediately, they lose track of time. As they move deeper, they find signs of bizarre biological change. Flowers shaped like people, mutated animals, and abandoned buildings overtaken by strange growth. One team member is killed by a monstrous bear that later returns using the woman that it murdered's voice as bait.
Such a good scene.
Another disappears silently into the landscape, and a third becomes paranoid and violent before being killed by the bear.
Only Lena and the team leader make it to the lighthouse. Mm-hmm. Team leader shortly dies, very shortly afterwards. But Lena finds a video showing Kane calmly speaking before setting off a grenade on his lap.
Yes.
And then a second identical Kane stepping into frame. The one who came home was a copy.
Mm-hmm.
And in the chamber below, the Shimmer creates a kind of humanoid being that mirrors her every move. She eventually tricks it into mimicking her using a grenade, destroying the lighthouse, collapsing the Shimmer. All's well that ends well. But back at the facility, Lena meets the copy of Kane, who admits he isn't the original. Because she asks him, and she's like, "Are you really Kane?" And he says, "I don't think so."
Mm.
She gives him a hug, and her eyes shimmer just like his. Roll credits. It's the bad ending. Or is it, let's get into it?
Yeah, I don't... Okay, so...
You've seen it before, right?
I've seen this film before. I saw it when it came out. It was like it was a big deal, you know, brand new sci-fi.
Right.
Sort of cosmic horror-esque.
From the guy who made Ex Machina. He was hot off Ex Machina. We were all excited.
It was huge.
This was weirdly, for some reason, on Netflix. I'm going to tell everyone why.
It was.
But I remember the same, watching it. And like me, did you watch it and kind of go, yeah.
I watched it. It was tough to watch, but it was great. Because the more the film unravels, the more you see the self-destructive traits of every character.
Yeah.
And you learn more about everyone's backstories, which is kind of like, oh, okay. So this is just a government-funded suicide mission that everyone is opted in for because of situation. And I'm like, that's fucking harrowing. And then when it ends, I'm like, is that really the ending that I wanted to this harrowing, rough watch of a film?
Yep.
At the time, the answer was no, but I've rewatched it now, obviously for this. I watched it today, earlier, got way more from it, and I think it was probably the Ryoka shame that was chasing me around the room. I've got some thoughts on the shadow mirror person at the end.
I think we agree on that. I think knowing you, I think we're going to have taken a lot of the same takeaways, and this is part of the reason I think it's our film.
Okay.
Because the first time I watched it, I was fully on board until we got to the bear.
Yeah.
The bear was great. And then once the bear was out of the picture and the film continued, I didn't really know what was going on because I was pre-final breakdown.
Right.
It's the final breakdown.
Oh, no, no.
Right.
No.
So I was on like number one or number two. I can't remember. No, probably maybe even before all of them.
We were both active users at this point as well. Like, right. I was fully masked addict.
Just right, functioning
in society.
100%.
Should not have been trusted with the amount of shit that I was trusted with.
I've got a couple of personal revelations that I find deeply uncomfortable that I realized because of this film that I think interesting.
Okay.
Before we get into the deep and the murk. Right? Before we go into the sunken place.
Okay.
I need to catch up on Garland, because last time I was telling you about him, I was telling you about his posh boy private education and his aristocratic roots, right?
Yeah.
And I kind of want to heal your perception of him a little bit.
Oh, it's already healed, man. See, my only perception with Christopher Nolan, being the posh boy that he is the scarf. And as far as I can tell, there's no Garland scarf.
Not yet.
So I'm good.
Maybe Nolan got his scarf post-inception. We don't know. Scarfception.
We'll see.
Well, would it help if I let you know that Garland is a certified fucking gamer?
I know this.
Right?
Recently came out that he's on like, isn't he on like his sixth or seventh playthrough of Elden Ring?
New game plus six in Elden Ring.
And it gets harder each time and he's just milling through it.
Famously hard game.
In his 50s.
But he's always been a gamer because I wanted to kind of dig into how he made the Danny Boyle connection, and obviously it's 28 Days Later. So I was like, okay, 28 Days Later, why does he go from writing The Beach about a student having a gap year to zombies? And I found the quote. Not long before writing 28 Days Later, there was a game on the PlayStation, Resident Evil.
Yeah.
And what Resident Evil did was it reminded me how much I loved zombie movies. And there was another thought, which is after I got good at playing the game, the zombies aren't actually very scary because you can kill them easily or just walk away from them.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But there was something else in the game, which was these dogs. Mm-hmm. The dogs moved really quickly and they would actually give me jumps. And that's the thing that gave me the sort of idea of a zombie movie where the zombies move quickly.
Amazing. Amazing. So Resident Evil 2 on the PlayStation 1, my brother-in-law, John, I was like, fuck, man, PlayStation 1. And we got on this whole, we had a few drinks together. Mm-hmm. We got on like a reminiscent thing, nostalgia kick. PlayStation 1, oh, this game. Resident Evil 2 was the one. We both fucking played it. We both loved it. It was mint. Anyway, day after, I go buy a PlayStation 1. I get a copy of Resident Evil 2. I fucking boot it up. Didn't buy a memory card. That's important to the story in the moment. Didn't buy a memory card. And I'm playing through and I'm like, for fuck's sake, the dogs, man. I forgot about the dogs. You're running
scary
through.
Bastards.
You're running through this, that, and the other. I get to an alleyway just past the dogs that we were both stuck on, right? Because he's gone out. He's pissed off. He's gone out for a smoke. He's gone to grab a beer. He's like, fuck this. I just need a minute. I got past that bit and I ran downstairs and I was like, mate, you never guess what the fucking dogs are done. Don't worry about it. Let's get cracking. And we were both little
over
kids,
the moon.
So fucking excited, like giddy, running up these stairs, running up to a game over screen and three dogs. Because I forgot that the second you get out of the door, there's more dogs that just come and track you down. So I just left it. No memory card. So couldn't just sort of boot it back. Sold the PlayStation
Savage.
About a week later.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's tainted from that point.
Yeah, got it gone.
Tainted from that point. Yeah. So look, he's the same guy. He had the same experiences.
Love the
he
shit.
He probably sold his PlayStation not he long after.
You can do no wrong, man. I'm telling you, you can do no wrong.
Now Garland's done. Do you know the five stages of grief?
Denial, anger, bargaining, depression, acceptance.
Nailed it. Yeah. There's a boy who's had a life. Right? So first stage.
Yeah.
Kane comes home.
Yeah.
He's clearly not right.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't remember how he got in the room.
Yeah.
Or really who she is or what she is. And she's like, oh, that's my husband. Because obviously, what other context would you have? And she ends up abducted by the government. And they explain where the shimmer is.
Yeah.
Your husband went in. And she's like, I'm going in.
She owes it to him.
She owes it to him.
Because he went in to try and do something.
Because he went in to try and do something, so she's going to try and do the same. Which is not the reason that she owes it to him at all.
It's not the reason.
The reason that she owes it to him is that she's been cheating on him for at least a full year.
With the most boring man in existence. That right. character is a fucking papier-mâché cutout. Are we being serious?
Yeah,
There's more character in a Danny DeVito cutout that you buy from eBay.
He's a GCSE science textbook.
It's not even that, because that's got use. I feel like he's like, in this film, he's just the guy that's like, hi, I've got a wife. I know that we fucked, but would you like to come to a barbecue with me and my wife?
He's one of those characters that doesn't need more depth than they get, because he's on screen for 30 seconds.
Yeah.
But the 30 seconds...
on his back for 25.
Yeah.
I fucking hate this guy.
So that's kind of the denial stage.
Okay, yeah.
Right, well, she's in denial. Everyone's kind of in denial about what's going on. But someone behind the scenes is doing the same.
Okay.
Dave Ellison.
His husband comes home from secret mission.
No. Dave Ellison's the son of the CEO of Oracle,
a
billion-dollar tech company. Oracle, like, do networking and databases.
I've never heard of this company.
They're insane. They're the company that, like, if you're Apple, you need to work with Oracle to get stuff done.
Right, okay.
Right? They're like a proper infrastructure company.
Right, okay.
So he's obviously grown up Silver Spoon, tech hook, right?
Sure.
He's also a Nepo Baby film producer. He's the head of Skydance Productions.
Oh, wow.
The company that made Geostorm and Terminator Genesis.
Great movies.
Well... let's take Geostorm, for example. Guess what movie had just come out to widespread mockery and a loss of $130 million, not including marketing?
2012?
Geostorm.
Got you.
Geostorm was hot off the press.
Amazing.
Everyone was going, what a ridiculous piece of shit. And everyone was going, I can't believe you set fire to at least $120 million, not including the marketing costs.
I'm genuinely upset because Geostorm is one of those films where I like to watch films that are so fucking ridiculous.
Same.
That
it's
you're
Moonfall,
like, this
right?
is stupid.
It's a brilliant it's film to watch for that.
It's, yeah.
If I'd paid 30, 40 quid to have my night out at the cinema,
yeah,
I would be annoyed. that I'd spent 30, 40 quid to go see Geostorm at the cinema.
I'm annoyed that you spend 30, 40 quid to go to the cinema because that's an insane.
I know, I'm going to go get a Cineworld thing. And also, yeah. I'm a fat man, so I need my snacks.
Yeah, but you get discount on your snacks.
Yeah, I'm doing it.
So you get a free ticket.
Next payday, I'm doing it. I'm
Jesus
doing it.
Jesus Christ.
Jesus.
How long have you been here now? Too long.
So like you, Ellison's feeling a bit fragile.
Okay.
He's feeling a little bit feisty, right? So when Annihilation wrapped shooting in 2016.
Yeah.
And has a terrible test screening.
Right.
He decides that he wants rewrites, saying that the movie's too intellectual.
Yeah.
And too complicated.
I understand this because it has to be entertainment.
Yeah.
It has to be an entertaining thing. You can't go to the cinema and sort of break out a notepad and start fucking, you know, staring at your own demons and being like, oh shit, I've just paid 40 quid to be scared of my own life.
But I think that's what this film is, and I think that's why I love it.
No, it is. It's incredible.
But then we get to stage two, you see. Mm. Anger, right?
Okay.
So I know we had a brief chat about this beforehand, and I think we might disagree, but for me, the second they get in the zone,
right,
and the second they start trying to cooperate with each other,
got you,
the kind of camaraderie outside the shimmer really quickly devolves to anger.
Yes, it does. Because you get the confusion to begin with, and there's not seeds of mistrust, but they find a videotape of the last people that were using the base as their base.
That's hideous.
And
yeah.
It's fucking well upsetting.
Found footage of
a stomach being cut open. Kane like literally opens up another dude, and his intestines are moving like snakes, they're writhing around and moving about. Like, so much super.
Do you know what's disturbing about that? Is not the intestines.
No.
It's Oscar Isaac's performance of wonder. He's got like a joyous wonder in his face.
The way that he cleans his hands is an almost sort of like ceremonious way.
Holy,
where it's sort of
washing
like...
washing of the hands.
You know when a little kid has been allowed to play in mud and they've had the time of their life? There's this weird innocence to it, like a wanderlust. And I hated it.
You mentioned earlier self-destructive. Every member of this all-female team has got a self-destructive habit.
Yes.
Now, this is why I say this is our film.
Yeah, because one of them is an addict.
One of them's an addict, one of them's a self-harmer, one of them is suicidal, and one of them's a cheat. They've all got a habit. And I realized whilst watching this film, because I kind of went, okay, well, they're all self-destructive. They've all gone on this suicide mission. The world around them is changing. Mm-hmm. And as they start to fall apart as a team, it's a wonderfully apt and well-observed sense of, like, the self-destructive path, be it addiction or self-harm or this or other, is so selfish. It's, I'm going through this.
Yeah.
Why is the world around me not conforming to what I need?
Mm-hmm.
How dare you not recognize my pain? I won't recognize yours because you're not recognizing mine.
Yeah. But then also you've got every member of the team trying to pull the mission in their own direction because they think they know what's best for everyone.
Based on their own experience and their own sort of background.
Yeah. And it's fair enough, but none of it's based in professionalism. None of it's based in academia. It's all based on, right? I'm fucking sober. I don't want to be here.
Right.
This is bullshit. I need to leave right now. And then he's trying to get everyone on board to that. The other one, obviously, like the cancer-riddled suicidal one, is literally like, fuck you all, we're going forward.
I just need to see what's at the lighthouse.
I'm dying there. I need to know what it is. That's the end of the road for me. I'm going. This is why you're all here. Have fun. Do you know what I mean? And it's all kind of fucky.
They've all got their own trauma that they're running from, and there's a direction they need to run in it. Now Dave Ellison's was Geostorm.
Okay.
He was running from Geostorm.
Right.
And so he was saying, this movie is too intellectual and it's too thinky and it's this, that, and the other.
That's the issues with Geostorm. It was too thinky.
It was too thinky, right?
Thinky for the masses.
There we go.
He needed to dumb it
down. Fortunately, he wasn't the only producer on set.
Okay.
There was also Scott Rudin.
Okay.
Right? Now, Scott Rudin is a big dog producer.
Right.
He did Social Network. He did Lady Bird.
Cool.
He does great films.
Yeah.
Right. He's also a terrifying man.
Okay, terrifying how?
Well, I was going to write a few from this webpage that I found. 21 notorious Scott Rudin stories.
Right.
I'll just read the headlines.
Okay.
Reportedly kicked and punched so many holes in his office walls that assistants covered them with plants. Apparently his office was like a jungle.
He sounds like a Kyle that's just been denied a monster.
Yeah, yeah.
You've had two already, Kyle. You can't get another one.
He pushed an assistant out of a moving car.
That's baller.
Right?
Yeah, that's money, that is.
He cracked cell phones in half like he was shucking oysters.
Amazing. Dude, I want to do that so bad.
His assistants used to measure the length of the cord on his phone so that they would know that when he threw the phone at them.
All right, yeah, that's kind of fucked up.
Right.
That's kind of fucked up.
He reportedly fired someone for bringing in the wrong breakfast muffin.
Yeah, understandable. If you want bacon, sausage, egg, and someone brings you fucking ham and egg, I'd be fuming. Be fuming. Someone misses out the bacon and just sausage and egg. Fuck you. What am I? A vegetarian?
I'm not saying he's not a monster. I'm not saying that he's not an abusive ass. And I've worked with abusive assholes, and that work environment is terrifying.
Fuck, I dated him.
It's fair. We've got different kinks. But this one, I've got to give him credit. He had a massive falling out with Harvey Weinstein about...
Not sharing.
No. No, here's the thing. All of his are like violence towards people he doesn't see as doing their jobs right.
Right. So right. Underlings, like employees.
Yeah. But he's not fucking them. He's just fucking them up.
Yeah.
But they had a falling out about Nicole Kidman's nose.
What?
Because she wears a prosthetic nose in The Hours.
Right.
And they were having a feud about it. So once it all got settled, he sent Harvey Weinstein smoked. He was trying to quit. So he sent Harvey Weinstein 600 cigarettes.
Fucking amazing. That's incredible. Went,
thanks for your help.
Amazing. That's amazing. What a gun. Fuck. I would kill for a sliver of that confidence.
Right.
You know what I mean? Someone's right. Pissed me off and they're trying to get sober. I'd send him a crate of like the finest wines. You know what I mean? You trying to quit smoking? 600 fags. There you go, mate. Have a good one.
So the whole thing was, it was in, you know, Rudin fought for it. Thank God.
Thankfully.
But this is where we enter bargaining.
Right.
Because I again, tell me if you agree.
Mm-hmm.
For me, the bargaining is immediately after the bear is dead. And Ventress, okay. The team leader, is like, I'm here to kill myself, so I'm going to that lighthouse.
Right.
Fuck all y'all.
Yeah.
And then they're like, well, we've got to get out. And Lena lies to the team. And I was like, well, the quickest way out is the coast.
Yes.
Which it may well be, but that's not the reason she wants to go.
But I kind of agree with her, because if you're just walking a shoreline, unless the octopi or the fucking sharks have suddenly got man legs and they can just chase you down a beach, you can at least see what's coming and you're not wandering through a fucking swampland full of crocodiles and bears. Do you know what I mean?
If I'd just been woken up by a bear that was trying to attract me to it,
right,
with the scream of its last murdered victim,
right,
it's stolen the voice of my friend.
Yeah.
I'm not going to go anywhere. There might be crabs. What have the crabs got?
You're going to have issues.
Crabs are going to have tits and they're going to sexually confuse me. And before I know it, I'm going to be getting wanked off by a claw.
I'd go to the beach, man. You could at least see them coming. You know what I mean? That's a crab. Might just nip around.
My worry is that the crabs would see me coming all over my tummy. Mm. And I don't want that. I don't want that.
Tummy in a fucking visual of you coming on yourself. Tummy's the wrong word.
Glazing my tummy like
stop
a,
saying tummy.
Like a donut.
I don't like that. Don't know why. I really don't like it. I can't put my finger on why.
All right. Cool. All right.
Put your tummy away.
No, I'm going to get it out. So the Hollywood Reporter has got an article talking about Paramount dealing with this film and then selling it to Netflix, essentially.
Right.
This is what happened when there was a brief period, funnily enough, around about 2018, where Netflix was beginning to buy streaming rights from studios for films that the studios weren't too sure about.
Right.
Because there was this big production argument between two of the main producers. It wasn't testing well. Netflix subsidized the deal. And Alex Garland, I was reading interviews with Alex Garland about, you know, he's trying to promote the film.
Yeah, of course.
Whilst also being like, well, we're not really sure where it's going to be released right now, and trying to like sugarcoat it.
What
being
a fucking
like,
nightmare, man. Right, this is part of your contract. You need to go out and sell it. Where?
Worse than that, it's we're going to find somewhere to dump this piece of shit. It's not coming out in cinemas, and if it is, it's coming out for 1 week.
Right.
And then it's going straight on Netflix, because Netflix are going to give $40 million for it. Because no one likes this film, Alex. Anyway, go and promote it, darling.
Yeah.
So he's there trying to do these interviews, being like, oh, it's all a bit up in the air. We're still trying to find the best place for it as a story, knowing full well that like it's tested poorly. The producers are having fist fights over it.
That's a fucking nightmare.
The studio are just dumping it for 40 mil.
Yeah. That's amazing. That's what you want with your fucking project that you've just poured your heart and soul into.
Right. That's my bargaining chunk, right?
Okay.
And it was around about this point that I realized, I was looking at all these self-destructive women.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, okay, well, I've obviously clearly got self-destructive habits and this kind of stuff. And at the moment, when my bad head weather blows in,
mm-hmm.
I'm just napping.
Okay.
I'm getting on the sofa.
Mm.
I'll be like, right, I'm just going to have a break from whatever I'm doing. Watch a YouTube video or have a little moment to calm asleep.
I fucking love that though, to be honest.
But I always feel
that when I'm feeling great.
Right. I do that. I only do that when I'm feeling terrible.
Okay.
Right. It's like everything's too much.
Right.
That's too stressful. That's too stressful. I don't feel I can do that well enough to want to do it. So I'm just going to check out.
Got you.
And I'm just going to watch something that I'm not even particularly enjoying.
Mm.
But I think subconsciously I know that just time is passing. And at a certain point, it'll get far enough past when I was supposed to do what I'd planned to do
mm-hmm.
that I can let go of that plan.
Right.
Rather than saying, okay, I'm going to finish. I'll say, I'm going to clean the house.
Yeah.
I'm going to get the dishes done. I'm going to get the laundry done. And then for whatever reason, it'll just get postponed and postponed and postponned.
Right.
Because I'm doom scrolling.
Yeah.
And then I'll nap. And then I wake up from the nap. And that's the point I go, well, it's all ruined. I can't do it now.
Got you.
So I just have to move on with my life. I guess I'll cook dinner and this, that, and the other.
Got you.
And it's made me realize that, I mean, not realize that I need therapy. I've known that I need therapy for a long time. It's made me realize the wild parties
mm-hmm.
and the drinking and the drugging and the promiscuity and all that kind of stuff
sure.
was probably quite attractive because it was a cool mechanism. Or a sort of externally, superficially cool to other people mechanism to do what I do anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it's not that I have an addiction to that drug or that alcohol or that lifestyle.
Right.
It's just that those substances and lifestyles and people
mm-hmm.
were a good little, like, lick of paint to put over a mechanism that I have.
Okay.
Right?
That's an interesting
and now that I don't have that paint...
Yeah.
Now that I'm like, well, I'm not going to do these things.
Yeah.
I'm still doing self-destructive shit.
Yeah.
It's just not cool self-destructive shit.
Yeah.
It's napping and eating too much.
I'll fucking agree, man. Like, that's sort of painfully accurate.
I'm doing the same stuff I did
when
I was an addict or when I was, you know, lying to myself.
Right.
I've just found new things that aren't outwardly as destructive or expensive.
Okay. That's interesting. And that's big man moves to sort of sit and admit it. Because, like, back in my old careers and stuff like this, I was working in territories that were like right across Europe or west coast of America.
Cool as fuck.
California, this kind of shit. So you'd land in California and be like, this is my job. I need to get some shit done, but also I'm going to go to the beach, the arcade, I'm going to get fucked up in Santa Cruz, I'm going to buy a skateboard, I'm going to head out here, I'm going to do this and this.
Cool guy shit.
So you have to sort of sacrifice your sleep
mm-hmm.
and your eat and your drink and your health to run around and be...
All those things.
All the things all at once. But I think for me it was more of a masking technique.
Yep.
Just sort of like the social anxiety is gone.
Yeah.
I can now fit in and I can do the whole sort of... whatever I need to be in that situation to make something, to facilitate something, I can do that, no trouble, because I'm two whiskeys deep and I've got all the fucking confidence in the world. Whereas now, no whiskeys for 4 years. And when I get into a situation, I'm immediately like, is this weird for you? It's weird for me. What would you like? You want to watch a film?
Okay. Right. Yeah.
You know what I mean? I work in a cinema now. Like, there's no pressure. There's no pressure at all. I'm just super weird with it.
I'm fine with the confidence stuff. I think I've been realizing how much of my life is just 5-year-old me pulling all the levers.
Mm.
I think it's a single parent who had a job.
Yeah.
Not getting enough attention.
Right.
So wanting to be a musician.
Or a music producer
or a fucking podcaster.
Yeah.
And then when I'm sat by myself and not getting that and not having that social interaction,
right,
I internalize it as it's because I'm not worth that attention.
Then
because I'm not worth that attention, I can't do the things I need to do because clearly I'm not a person, so I'll sleep.
Right.
Whereas previously I'd have the exact same mechanisms and I'd do drugs.
Yeah. But that's just because drugs are great.
Yeah, but it's also, it's
I mean,
thing
in moderation, yeah. Fantastic.
If you can do them in moderation.
Oh, you can't.
You can't.
You can't.
That's the thing.
It's because they're great.
Yeah, exactly.
No one's addicted to shoveling shit out of a shed. Do you know what I mean? No one's like, fuck, I can't wait to just get in there and stink of absolute shit for the rest of the week. No one's doing that because it sucks. Do you know what's great?
Drugs.
Cocaine. Yeah. It's meant. I'm not endorsing it at all. I'm just saying objectively, the reason that there are so many addicts and that drugs are so expensive is because they are objectively great.
Well, it's train spotting, isn't it? With Renton at the start saying, like, I don't want you to think we're idiots.
Yeah.
Like, no one would do that. No one would be willing to live like this.
No, fuck no.
If it wasn't objectively the best experience you
could
have in life.
This is exactly what I'm saying. Dude, the weird shame that's followed me around today is literally because of that, though, being sort of like, be easier, though, wouldn't it? And I'm like, yeah, obviously. But because I've taken the easy road every fucking day for about 2 decades, maybe.
It doesn't take any effort to fall down a hill.
Zero. You can fucking slide down that shit.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
I mean? I'd like to think of myself as the Tony Hawks of falling downhill.
But this is where we get to stage 4. Depression, right?
That's at the bottom of the hill.
Where Lena ends up when she kind of goes, she's at the beach. You know, everyone's dead. Mm-hmm. Her mate's turned into a fucking tree.
Yeah.
I mean, you know your depression is bad when your mates are turning into trees.
Rather than going to the beach with
you. Rather going to the beach with you, right?
Yeah, that's right. I'm going to the beach. You want to come? Ah, sorry, mate. I'm so...
Exactly.
I'm plants now.
That's... There's a Chat Pile remix. I am plant now. And this is where the tone of the movie gets really quite heavy. And I think this is why I tuned out on my first watch.
Okay.
Because we had like human voice Scream Bear and I was like, oh, sick. And we had like Last of Us fungus people on walls that have mutated.
Yeah.
And Natalie Portman's just raw dogging it with her hands, even though she's meant to be a biologist. She's just like, let me touch all the things.
I've got reasons for this.
Which makes thematic sense.
It makes
sense.
With
the self-destruction. But when you don't know that, you're like, why is she just finger blasting
a fungus? She's
monitoring
her own blood the entire time. She knows that it's in her. She's like, well, fuck it. In for a penny, in for a pound. I'm here for guilt. Like, I deserve this.
I'm punishing
myself.
This is
it.
Yeah.
I deserve this. Fuck, am I wearing a glove when I can see like a tumor skeleton crawling up a fucking wall? Like, I'm going to finger it.
Right.
Step back.
Right. And then this is the bit that I think snapped me out of enjoyment on my first watch, because it suddenly becomes very heavy.
Right.
And if you've not clicked into the subtext and you're just watching a nice sci-fi movie, you're like, what?
Nice is such a weird, weird adjective to put before that.
I think I went into it expecting a kind of interesting surface level adventure into a new world.
Right. I got you.
20,000 Leagues.
Okay. Yeah. Right? Yeah.
Lost
sure.
in space.
Sure.
We're going to a place and it's going to be different and interesting. And I'm like, okay, well, the bear was great. What's next? And what's next is an existential crisis. I'm like, oh, that's a weird choice.
Yeah, what's next is Invasion of the Pod People. Like, the body snatchers are now here, and you're like, oh, fucking this one again.
Right.
Yeah.
But clicking into it now that we've had breakdowns and are living different lives, and I was kind of sat here having my realization that realistically I've not changed anything about my habits. I've just switched them out for boring ones that people won't object to.
Yeah.
Like napping. It's a really interesting film, and this is where it really grabbed me this time.
Okay.
Funnily enough, David Ellison was pretty depressed at this point as well. Admittedly, I think he's got reason.
Yeah.
Because everything he touches turns to shit.
Yeah.
With the notable exception of Mission Impossible and Star Trek. But let's be real.
Right.
If David Ellison left the Mission Impossible franchise, I think it would do fine.
Yeah.
No one's turned up to a Star Trek movie because Dave Ellison's produced it.
I'll agree.
His sister, however, Megan.
Right.
Who produced films like Lawless, Zero Dark Thirty, Foxcatcher, Joy, Detroit, and The Ballad of Buster Scruggs. Because his sister, Megan Ellison, is the founder of Annapurna Pictures.
No way. The Ballad of Buster Scruggs.
Yeah.
That's a fucking sick film, that is, man.
So he's there, David, with his flop movie that they've had to sell to Netflix.
Mate.
That he's basically created. He's had Geostorm.
Yeah.
He's had a fucking nightmare.
Yeah.
He's then walked onto a set with Alex Garland, Natalie Portman, Tessa Thompson, Scott Rudin, and fucked it.
Yeah, to be fair.
Meanwhile, his sister's like, I'm working with the Coens.
Yeah, just got in with Joel and Ethan, mate. You know what I mean?
Right.
Just going to bang out a ballad of Buster Scruggs. Just, what are you working on now, sorry? Oh, the Baywatch movie. Sick. Good for you. Jack Ryan. Nice. What's nice. Next? G.I. Joe. Oh, it is.
Have you got the list up?
I've just got a list up. It's
like, give Dude. Us some more. G.I. Okay. So what were those ones?
G.I. Joe.
Fucking dog water.
Baywatch.
Dog shit.
Snake Eyes.
Oh, fucking hell.
Ghosted.
What? I've never even heard of that.
Yeah, me neither. But I'm 99% sure that's Ana de Armas, so I'll be watching that later.
Oh, okay.
He did produce the underdog story of the century, though. It's a really heartwarming story of how an underdog
goes up against
you know, a big industry and really, really gets to grips with it.
If
and
you
it
say
just
some
comes out
silly
on top.
Shit right now, Ben.
It's the Nike film, Air. The one where it pits the corporate giant as the underdog in the shoe industry.
Ben Affleck and Matt Damon.
It's fucking awful.
That was the moment. That
who
was the
rooting for Nike in the sneaker race of the 80s? Like, who gives a fuck?
I was working on a really personal, really touching tribute to one of my favorite musicians for a Patreon exclusive.
Right.
That heavily involves the story of Matt Damon and Ben Affleck.
Yeah.
And then Brian Wilson died and that kind of stole my thunder for the Patreon exclusive.
Yeah, sorry.
It'll come out at some other time. But I'm a big fan of Good Will Hunting. I'm a big fan of Matt Damon and Ben Affleck because of Good Will Hunting.
Yeah.
And when I watched Air, that was the moment I could stop caring about them. Because I went, oh, they're in this. And they really tied their names to it.
Yeah.
As like, we care about this project.
Yeah.
We came back together to work together for the first time in a decade to tell you this story. And I watched it and went, well, they've said it's not just an advert for the shoes. Yeah. They've thrown their creative weight behind it. They wouldn't sell out their entire credibility built up over decades for a Nike commercial. And then I watched the film and went, oh, they would.
Okay. I get it, though, because it's fucking Nike. Do you know what I mean? You just do it. You just, Nike calls and goes, do you want to make a film about us? You just do it.
Yeah, you hear a noise in the bathroom.
You go check it out. You just do it.
You don't.
You just fire
a shotgun through the door like a proper.
That's so Adidas. Look at you. This is what you don't like, Air. Underdog story of the century.
Well, let's wrap up. Let's begin to wrap up with stage 5.
Let's do it.
Acceptance, right?
Okay.
Because the end of this movie, she gets into the lighthouse. She discovers that her husband that she's been trying to save is in fact a trans-dimensional cosmic horror beast clone of her real husband. Watches her real husband self-immolate himself.
Phosphorus grenade. Nom bomb shit. That
it's
is
disgusting.
In a hand.
It's so viscerally upsetting to watch a body burn like that. Just calmly sat there.
Heartbreaking.
But then she meets the monster. They don't really have a fight. This thing mirrors her.
It's learning from her. I've got something on this. But yes, they're sort of doing a weird dance.
Mm.
To try and leave the lighthouse.
Yeah.
And it's sort of this sort of weird alien, formless, shapeless humanoid is mirroring her but almost backing her into a corner, keeping her at bay.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
100%. Asked about the movie last year, Garland said, Annihilation is just not something that everyone wants. Talking about the film, not the actual state.
Well, it's the same thing.
Yeah. Like, there's no judgment in that. There's no requirement on them to want that. But it is what I want, and so I work according to the thing I suppose I would like to see. And I don't actually think about the commerce side of it at all. I can engage with it, and I can have conversations about it, but I'm not going to change the thing in service of it. This is the intention. This is the script. These are the visuals. This is what we're going to do. Do you want it or not? And if they say yes, you just do it. Back to Nike.
See?
Right?
Air.
The moment.
Underdog story of the fucking century. I'm telling you.
And I think that the film, in a way, it's kind of saying, look, no matter how sober or medicated or healthy you are, give us a good thing and watch Ben and I start slowly unpicking the stitches on it.
Mm.
Like, you will be sober for however long, nearly 4 years.
Yeah.
You'll forget. You'll go, oh, nice Ryoka. And then that is your brain for the day going, you're a piece of shit.
Oh, 1,000%.
You're a piece of shit. And it's not because you are a piece of shit. It's not because you deserve to feel any kind of way for forgetting, for having internalized your sobriety so much that you don't have to put active effort into it anymore. And occasionally your brain skips. It's because the reason you're sober and the reason I am sober enough is because we have that self-destructive urge. Because we will nap. Because we will bully ourselves. So I think this is why the film is so hard, because whether it's fictional Lena or factual Dave Allison or you or me or you, dear listener, quite often the big bad at the end of the world is ourselves getting in our own way.
Yeah.
And she tries to escape. She tries to move backwards. She tries to move towards the exit.
Yeah.
And she ends up crushed up against it.
She does.
Because the only way forward in life is progress, to change. And eventually death, because the version of you that you are has to die to become the version of you that you need to become.
Right.
You have to evolve into something so alien to your current self that it horrifies you. Mm-hmm. You know, you might think you're doing something because you want to pay your dues to your dead husband or stop disaster or advance science, but whether it's a cancer cell or a multidimensional god, the only progress is through death of what you are to facilitate the birth of what you have to be.
Yeah.
And usually the only thing in the way of that is who you are now.
That's a good way of looking at it, man. That's a great way of looking at it.
And then kind of once you've done that and you've let your past die and you've become the new you who doesn't carry the old wounds.
Yeah.
Someone might ask you who you are, and like Kane, you won't know yet. And hopefully. I feel like your little wobble in the supermarket is you moving into your new self who doesn't carry the old wounds of I am sober, that is the thing at the forefront of my mind.
That's a much nicer way of looking at it.
And you're then you're going to look at a wine and go, oh, that would be nice. And rather than it being, that's an addict saying, I need that wine.
Right.
That's a sober man acknowledging that it would be nice and choosing not to.
Okay.
You're not saying, I need that wine, give me that wine.
Yeah.
You're so sober that you can look at the wine, go, oh, that would be nice, and then walking away.
Okay. That's a way nicer way of looking at it. Because I've had a little voice in my head all day just going, shitter!
Right.
Shitter!
Yeah.
Shitter! Do you not remember? Here's 1,000 memories of all the fuck-ups.
But that's not you anymore, because that guy died.
It's not. I just need to feed it a phosphorus grenade.
You do.
You know what I mean?
But I think that's it. You need to acknowledge the fact that you're not that guy, because you are the guy who walks out of the supermarket now.
That's really interesting. Okay, so the ending of the film where Lena is face-to-face with the formless sort of alien humanoid who is learning how to be Lena.
Yep.
Lena in that moment has destroyed her marriage. She's cheated on her husband. She had an affair.
She's killed everyone in the team.
She's killed everyone that wanted to go back, and they could have.
Yeah, they could have.
But she was like, no, we're going forward. So she's done all of this awful shit. She's carrying it with her. That's who she is in that moment.
Yep.
And rather than fight up against the door,
this
formless thing.
Try and get back to where she was. Try and save the past.
Yeah, can't do that. So what she then chooses to do is teach this formless thing that is slowly becoming the version of herself that she is right then and there. She teaches it to just delicately hold this grenade for the reason of self-destruction. Just hold this. Just hold this for us right here. This is how you do this. You just take the pin and then you just let it burn.
Yeah.
And this alien that has been shown self-destruction to a point of like, oh, fuck. Okay.
Yeah.
So a cancer-ridden suicidal woman is just barged in here and burst into 1,000 cells divided into each other. And this woman in front of me is showing me that the only way to be this person is to set herself on fire.
Yeah.
This fucking formless thing burns everything to the ground.
Yep.
As in chooses to take down the entire shimmer is now being burnt alive. Pure self-destruction. The alien has one lesson from this human. Destroy yourself. You're fucking awful. Look at what you're doing to your place.
Because I think what the story kind of implicitly sets up, and I don't think there's any blame in the situation, is I think Kane has done the healthy thing, and he's allowed his old self to die.
To become the new version of himself.
To become the new version of himself. Right. And he doesn't remember the pains that his wife caused him. He's moved on from them. They're not relevant to how he exists now because he's a new person. Whereas what she does is she teaches that new, she sees that new thing and she destroys it.
This is all very, very lovely. This is all very, very lovely. I took something a little bit different from this film.
Right.
The whole focus of the start of the film is that Lena works at Johns Hopkins University.
Studying cancer cells.
Studying cancer cells. Cancer cells divide. They're mindless. Mm-hmm. They just do what they do for the sake of doing what they do.
Yeah.
Sound familiar?
Doesn't it?
People in this film all do the same shit. For all of it, humans are a cancer, right? We're fucking awful, awful to this planet. We are literal tumors.
Yeah.
Eating the earth away, right?
Yeah.
Stick with me here.
I'm with you.
So the shimmer,
it
doesn't absorb, it doesn't take, it doesn't give, it
changes.
Refracts.
Yeah.
Changes, but it changes shit fundamentally in a way that it is then irreversible and also detrimental.
Yep.
Does this sound familiar?
Doesn't it just?
Does this sound familiar? Humans are a cancer. We are a disease.
I think you're totally right.
There's bits in the film that kind of fuck with me a little bit. At the end of the movie, Lena is being, she's being fucking grilled by the government, by an enormous group of faceless, nameless people that are all standing there judging every decision that she made, critiquing every tiny mistake.
Yep.
She's got a fucking tattoo on her arm that she didn't have before, but her teammate did.
Yep.
One of the teammate. I'm back on the air thing. Do you know what I mean? I'm just doing it.
Yeah, they all start to blend into one another. All she ends up getting a tattoo.
She's got this tattoo of an eight, which is a snake.
Infinity symbol.
Yeah, the snake eating its own tail.
Yep.
So the self-destruction thing is like now burned into her. That's a permanent lesson that she has to bear for the rest of her life, right? But did you notice the glass of water next to her?
I didn't.
Okay. Glass of water next to her. Some of the water is moving and like mutating.
Ooh.
In the glass.
Nice.
Which says that like the water at the beginning of the movie for Kane, or the copy of Kane, where he ends up sort of spluttering into it and blood comes out and it's not fit for him. It's not his thing. This is like, that's the alien world.
Right.
And then where Lena ends up, it is an alien world, but everything is facilitated because everything that she needs has been provided to her, but is also residing within her.
Ooh.
And I love that.
Ooh.
This is what I took away from it today. Humans are a cancer, but it's probably all right. You know what I mean? We can learn from it. We can internalize
it. It's learning from your processes.
I fucking love this.
And it's looking at the things that are eating you up and go, why?
Yeah.
And which direction are they going? And I need to go with it, not against it. Because change is going to happen either way. And I can either ride the top of the wave or I can get smashed by it.
Yeah, you either surf the wave or you drown. We learned that from Point Break. You know what I mean?
Now, just before we give you all our rating of this film, entering into the history books forever, the objective, actual worth of this piece of art, shall we see what the people on the internet have said about us?
Yeah.
We've got a brief one this week because, admittedly, we recorded our last episode yesterday, so it's only been 24 hours. We've had lovely comments, but there's one particular that I thought is relevant to you because you're the show's resident horror expert.
So Bolt Skiggins, Bolt Skiggins the third,
great username.
Honestly, fantastic. I want to meet the two predecessors. You know what I mean?
What Pappy and Grandpappy?
Yeah,
Grandpappy Bolt.
Grandpappy Bolt Skiggins.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? And Pappy Skiggins. They commented on one of our Funny Games Instagram reels. These are his favorite movies, his favorite horror movies. Evil Dead, The Fly, Funny Games, Alien, Nightmare on Elm Street 3. Okay. That's okay. The Thing.
Yeah.
And then an honorable mention to the OG Texas Chainsaw Massacre. All right.
See, I've not seen many of these films. I mean, okay, I've seen Evil Dead, The Fly, Alien,
Funny Games,
The Thing, Funny Games. Not seen Nightmare on Elm Street 3. I've seen the OG Texas Chainsaw Massacre once about 15 years ago.
All right, we'll do that again soon.
That'd be good.
Yeah,
we can cover that.
I'll bring my DVD around, but it's the DVD cover is, the whole case is an actual chainsaw, like a cardboard chainsaw sleeve.
Nice.
So, mate, I tried to send it to a mate in Vegas 3 times. It got returned to me, so I took it as fate. So, Soz.
I'm going to say...
these are good.
I'm going to say The Nun 2.
Yeah.
I'm going to say The Conjuring 4.
Yeah. These are all...
Paranormal things. Activity 9.
Yeah. Sure.
And Cabin Fever.
Cabin Fever. Cabin Fever's not that bad.
Yes.
Yeah. It's not great, but it's not bad.
Alone in the Dark, 2005.
That's a great one.
I'd say that.
That's a good one. Uwe Boll. Nothing but horror.
Fear.com.
Oh, that was an interesting period. Webcam horror.
Flatliners.
Movies. Flatliners is a great one. What's wrong with you? Flatliners is great.
Okay. And Return of the Living Dead Part 2.
Again. That's pretty good.
I was just picking off a list.
Okay.
Do you know what? There is a list on here, though. White Noise, 2005.
Awful film.
Michael Keaton. I thought it was quite effective as a little spooky horror film.
When I was a kid, we got that from Blockbuster. Okay, maybe. And it was great.
That's the last time I watched it.
It was great. Watch it as an adult.
Okay.
Because it will shatter every memory you've got of that film. It's fucking awful.
Yours are you like the 80s classics, right? So you're...
Sleepaway Camp.
Jason Manford.
Jason Manford.
The one with the hockey mask.
Yeah. Friday the 13th.
There we go.
Objectively the best horror franchise that exists.
Okay.
By a long shot. I'm desperate to do it, but it's 12 when? Movies and it's going to end on a fucking anvil because it's the remake and I hate it.
So it's maybe wait for one more to be in the works.
It's one of those things. They've been fucking rumouring this for ages.
They take about 4 weeks to make, so we'll have to do the movie's quick step.
One of the owners of the franchise
will be out the next month.
Fucking spoiled that they're working on a new movie.
Right.
Guess where? On his fucking Cameo, because he was trying to sell videos on Cameo, and he was like, new one in the works. That was how it was announced.
Oh.
Yeah. So, you see what I mean? I'm not, like, massively hopeful.
Oh, I feel dirty.
This is what I mean, but there's no way for us to do it without the remake, but the remake literally, like, it's fucking... It's the Taylor Swift of the Friday the 13th franchise, you know what I mean?
Right, okay,
it's
you're gonna have to
qualify we're not getting
that.
Back together.
Right, okay. Yeah. Sorry, I thought it was I'm dating a guy who I'm eventually going to break up with to write an album about.
No, it's the sort of dickhead that would take a private jet to visit you.
In a hospital
where you really don't want to see them. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want this.
Took a private jet to the Arctic to raise awareness.
Yeah.
We got one more comment.
Go on.
Jenny M. Drew got in touch, said she had to pause listening to this week's episode 56 minutes in on the Patreon.
I am very sorry.
She had makeup on and she had people over soon. She didn't want to cry and you were making her cry.
I am sorry. I did apologize on that comment because I was like, you know, that's not really what I intended with the episode, but also couldn't really help. So
I know. You just can't help it. You make women cry. It's what you do. Just do it.
It's both a blessing and a curse.
That was Comic Corner Gang.
Just do it. Just clicked.
That was Comic Corner Gang, and we would hope it's really obvious how you can get involved. Maybe hear us out, dive into your thoughts about movies we're covering or movies you like. Yeah. Just find us on social media. Get interacting.
Go tell your fucking friends.
Yeah.
Go tell your friends about us. Be like, listen.
Go.
Do you know what these guys rated it? Because I don't. What are you rating it?
Go name drop us where you talk about movies. If you're part of one of these Facebook groups, every time you interact, just give us a drop. Just be like, you know, wherever
chances
it is.
I'm in those groups too.
Shit posting. just quick fact about the movie. Natalie Portman turned down being in Pride, Prejudice and Zombies to do this film.
Fuck off.
Funny that.
That's mental. We're doing our first live show.
We are.
At a fucking film festival that I've organised.
You've organised a film festival. That still is amazing to me.
I'm going on the radio soon to chat about it, like a proper BBC radio thing.
Oh
I'm
my
freaking
God.
Out. I'm freaking out. Because old Ben had the means for this. He was two whiskeys deep. He could be that person. Sober Ben is going to sit and be like, I don't know what I'm doing.
Hendrick said, you've not been on the radio till you've been on the radio sober or something like that.
Sure.
I wasn't listening though.
I don't know. This is what I mean. You know what I mean?
I mean, I'm obsessed with it.
But anyway, I've organised a film festival. It's part of the Rural Remix. It's four independent cinemas throughout Shropshire. We're all celebrating rural cinema films set in the countryside.
Boy.
So I thought that we'd do something like... Prim and proper, a little bit zombies and then zombie chaos. We're doing Pride and Prejudice and Zombies 28 years later. That's the fucking run up for the Saturday and the Sunday. But we've got activities between and I can talk about all of them now because everything's confirmed. On the Saturday, Pride and Prejudice. Then that's going to be followed up by a VHS treasure hunt, a town-wide VHS treasure hunt with prizes, tickets. There's fucking VHS.
For those of you that are not aware of the town of Wellington, it is all traversable on foot. But you can get from one end to the other in about 4 minutes.
Yeah, if that.
So you're not getting in the car to hunt these VHS. It's going to take you 20 minutes.
All right, but it's a town-wide hunt for VHS in five cool shots.
Exactly.
That's it. That's where it is.
You'll get a little bit of cardio, but not too much.
And then we're doing Pride and Prejudice and Zombies.
Yeah.
And then after Pride and Prejudice and Zombies on the Saturday is going to be me and you doing a live episode recording on Pride and Prejudice and Zombies. Yep. It's going to be an interactive episode. We're going to get the audience involved. We're going to get some Q&As going on. We're going to do some fun stuff. Then it's going to be 28 years later.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the Saturday night,
yep,
we've got a secret screening.
We do.
Which is going to be great. We've got a secret screening, but we've also got a secret interview, which has to come after. I was going to do it before, but it has to come after.
Right.
Realistically.
Really?
Logistically.
Because of timings.
Because of timings and because it's now pre-recorded, because one of them is parachuting that day. So it's fine. It doesn't matter, but that's Saturday.
I mean, put it this way. I'm already so nervous about this that I was debating putting lumps of raw coal up my ass.
Yeah.
So that when my sphincter tightened as I walked on that stage, I might walk out with diamonds.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. We'll just do that anyway.
Let's just change plans live on air now.
Yeah.
And that maybe I'll get a
I have told you about this, but this is fine.
You didn't tell me about the pre-record.
Oh, no, I haven't. No, that's my bad. I sorted that out last night and this morning.
Fine.
Anyway, Sunday, we're going to do the VHS treasure hunt in between Pride and Prejudice and Zombies. Then we're going to do an interview, a live in-person interview with Justin Pearson, who is stunt coordinator on a ton of films. He's done stunts in James Bond.
Yeah.
He's a fucking absolute legend. He's going to be there. He's going to be doing a Q&A. We're going to watch some of his stunts on the big screen. We're going to go through, talk about some fun stories. He's released a book. So we'll be doing a signing of his book, which I'm fucking super excited about.
Super excited.
Because I've started reading now. I don't know if I've told you this.
I know. I'm so jealous.
I'm through a book.
You've quit vaping. You've started the gym and you've started reading. You're doing all the things I said I would do when I got here. And I'm just melting.
That's it.
Into a pool of fungus.
And then we're going to round out the weekend on 28 years later. And maybe a bit of a fuck around on the Sunday evening. I don't know. We'll see.
We'll see. We'll see what we've got time for.
Yeah. Get your day ticket now for £24. It gets you everything. All three four movies on Saturday and all the activities and shit in between.
Do it.
£24.
Do it. See us live. Come see us live.
Wellington Orbit.
It's going to be a shit show and you're going to be telling your grandchildren about the time you saw two mentally unwell men shit the bed live on stage.
But then also, think about it logistically. You get to go home and never see that place again. I've got to go back to work. On the Tuesday, it's my close. So I've got to do all of this shit over the weekend, like debase myself in front of our normal clientele. Then I go to work again on Tuesday and pretend like nothing happened.
What are you going to rate? What are you going to rate Annihilation?
It's a really rough watch. It's a tough watch. It's not a sit down, turn your brain off and watch your movie. It's very much a sit up and pay attention.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many little details and there's so many little hints and clues throughout the whole movie. It's a gorgeous exercise in cinema.
Yes, it is.
It is not an exercise in movie.
No, it's not.
It has to be a fat 10 because of what it is and what it does.
Okay.
On an entertainment level, which is where I live.
Yeah.
This is where I am. 7.
Yeah, so
it's a fat 10. Cinematically, it's fucking incredible.
It's
a very important movie.
Yeah.
The way that it's written is insane. The visuals are ridiculous.
Yep.
The fucking performances are out of this world. It's a fat 10. For me personally, did I enjoy it? No, because it's a hard watch, but that's the intent of the movie.
You know, concept cars, like car manufacturers come out
with
insanely crazy designs
to
show us the future of automobiles, right? Generally, they look incredible.
Yeah.
They've got incredible specs.
Yeah, yeah.
But as a means of getting from A to B, they're fucking awful.
Yeah, you wouldn't touch it with a fucking barge pole.
Right. This is a Rubik's Cube where they've replaced the colours with drawing pins. And that's a fantastically wonderful artistic statement.
Yeah.
But it's a painful thing to interact
with. Yeah, 100%.
And I'm not Mr. Entertainment. I am Mr. Cinema. And I can't give this a fat 10.
Okay.
Because it's dull in places.
Mm-hmm.
It's necessary that it is dull in places.
Yeah, it has to be.
That's the point it makes.
Yeah.
This isn't a film you watch because it's entertaining or fun or this, that, or the other.
Mm-hmm.
It's got something to say. There's something it's got to say is quite serious and quite dark. And I appreciate that and I'm happy it exists. I put it in the same category that I put like Swans, the band, or Suicide, the band, or some Aphex Twin tracks. It's a wonderful thing to admire.
Okay.
It's not something to particularly enjoy.
It's really upsetting that you've in my mind then, I've just got a vision of you putting a Blu-ray in a CD rack and it's pissed me off. It's ruined my night.
Do you know what you've just done then?
What?
You've done the same thing. You know when like the times in our lives that we've had partners?
Sure.
And they've woken up and gone and they're in a mood.
Right.
And you go, what's up? And they go, you were really horrible to me in my dream last night.
That's essentially what you've just
done. That's what you've just done. No,
you've done that to me. You inflicted that on me.
Right, okay.
Apologise for my bad
thoughts. I'm sorry that you imagined me putting a Blu-ray in
for my
CD
imaginary
rack.
Thoughts.
Okay, good.
Respect my feelings.
You're hurt.
This is weirdly therapeutic.
Yeah, and I do. I'm sorry you felt like that. That's not fair.
Oh.
That's it. That's the end of the show.
That's it. Go tell your friends.
We love you all dearly.
We really fucking do. Thank you.
Thank you for the support. Means the fucking world. Now, you know.
Buy a ticket to the Rural Remix, Wellington Orbit. It's on July 11th, 12th and 13th. 12th and 13th, I've told you about. 11th is with Nell and I in the evening. It's going to be fun.
If we remember, we will put a link that you can purchase tickets from in the episode description. But don't bank on it because we have mental health issues and we'll probably forget.
Yeah, I'll have to amend this because I broke the website trying to do a multi-ticket. It's fine. It's a background thing.
Now, to thank you for spending an hour of your week with us, especially at the start of the week. You know, we see the stats. We know a lot of you listen on a Monday. Ben is going to wrap up the thoughts, themes and feelings of Annihilation into a Monday motivational pep talk. Good luck with that.
I got you.
While I just tell you what I always tell you to do, which is... God's you.
Burn it to the fucking ground. Get it gone. Learn your lesson. Move on. Stop fucking punishing yourself. Stop justifying every tiny mistake to a fucking horde of faceless people. They don't give a shit about your well-being. Drink your water. Enjoy your new tattoo. And fucking live your life. Is that your husband? Who gives a shit? She didn't.